Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by me. Yes, I am solo podcasting today. I have a veritable plethora of topics through which we will together meander. And before we dive in, I am reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment. I have been making it a consistent habit to invite your support by way of podcast reviews and Amazon reviews for my books. And I am noting that since making this request, I'm not noticing any new reviews. That's not to say that you're not showing up for this task. I don't know, maybe the big tech lizards are hiding your kind words and many, many, many stars from me. And there's another possibility here, which is that my pleas are falling upon deaf ears and you have not yet navigated on over to your podcast platform rating section or the Amazon Books rating section. And so I am going to invite you to click pause on today's podcast and to navigate on over to the appropriate review pages and to leave me some gushing hyperbolic praise there. I don't ask just so I could hear my own voice and stall before diving into the shows. I ask because it really truly is one of the best ways that you can be supporting me right now as I continue to show up for you with fresh content every single week. So thank you for showing up in service to me, your friend Danny, to our show, to our community, because it is your support, it is your vote for more of my content that inspires me to keep making content. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It's the very best way to ensure that we get to stay in touch. There are certain bits of my content and generative creative output that I only announce on the newsletters. That's right. I'm not giving everything to social media, and especially given their super gross intellectual property grabbing attempts by way of their user agreements when it comes to my swag line, my t-shirts, my mugs, my tote bags, I'm not sharing those on the socials. So as you're wanting to see what kinds of products I'm making and wear them and fill your home with various illustrated emblazoned products, then sign up for that newsletter at dannykatz.com and check out my secret threadless shop, dannykatz.threadless.com. Also, today's beverage of choice is anything but clear water. It is Chemical Free Body's amazing green powder, which has really become my daily go-to. And I am gonna pause for a quick sip because it's so full and inviting. So Chemical Free Body is one of my favorite supplements product lines, and their green 85 juice formula with D3 is not only chock full of a cornucopia of nutrients, it tastes really good. And they just dropped an apple flavor. This is not the apple flavor, this is the original flavor. And I find it very drinkable. As someone who's been doing green powders, green juices for many, many eons, I can honestly say this is the best tasting. And it's just so nutrient packed and dense. So I have a coupon code. I have a special affiliate link in the show description. I truly cannot recommend Chemical Free Body's products strongly enough. They're nano silver. They have silver mouthwash, silver toothpaste, the silver skin gel that's like incredible, and many other high vibe bodily optimizing products. So do use the link in the show description. Head on over to Chemical Free Body. Be sure to use my code when you check out for a discount and let us rejoice in our optimal health and well-being together. All right, let's dive in to the show today. Where to start? Where to start? Where to start? So many options. I do want to give us an update on the article front. So the article has not yet found a home in any of the mainstream publications I pitched. I knew it was a long shot, not just because journalism is totally dead, totally co-opted, and then there's the matter of my post-pandemic two writing reputation and how that's affected my journalism relationships. And I was thinking that this article could squeak through because it's calling out the erasure of Hispanic culture at the hands of the social justice philanthropists that have infiltrated Santa Fe. So none of the mainstreams have taken the bait. Charlie Robinson put it on Activist Post. And I just got news from Estancia News that they're going to run it as well. I keep waiting for it to land in some, like, it's the front page of the New York Times or something to put it in a newsletter and share it with you guys. I'm still like delusionally holding out for something like that, or the Free Press or Epoch Times to pull their heads out of their asses. But the problem is that I'm exposing their funders. Like, the Free Press is Barry Weiss, and she's the one who started University of Austin, and University of Austin takes money from Ford Foundation, aka CIA, and Ford Foundation is one of the primary justice philanthropies that I call out in this article. So you can see why it's kind of challenging. But the piece that I did want to share is I went to our city council meeting last week, and I ended up speaking with a young journalist who was in the audience. And I was talking to her about, like, what's the temperature in the newsroom? Are you guys truly objective? And I took her at face value, which is really on me, because how can, like, a young 20-something journalist in 2024 who's working for the Santa Fe New Mexican, which is part of New Mexico Local News Fund's various accelerator programs, which are funded by Omidyar, founder of eBay, and a host of other justice philanthropists, like, why would I think that she even understands what journalistic objectivity even is, right? It's like, I mean, it's totally different. But I remember when I was waiting tables and customers would ask me, what's your favorite thing? And sometimes I would say it out loud when I had a really bad attitude, but mostly it would be in my head where I'd be like, why do you care what my favorite thing is? Who knows that we share the same tastes in food? You know, like, why don't you just get what you like? But anyway, so I made the mistake of asking her what was going on in the newsroom, and she was saying, like, it's all on the up and up, and you should pitch our newsroom editor, blah, 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 blah. So I sent the article to the editor that she mentioned by name, and I didn't hear back. And then I sent a follow-up the next week, which is what I've done for all of them. And then I called to follow up, which I've only ever done at the Santa Fe New Mexican, which is why I think it's so interesting, bizarre that the same thing happens. So they have a new editor who's different from the editor they had during COVID. And I had pitched them during COVID on, like, me calling the New Mexico Health Department and asking how they were getting their numbers, how many cycles of PCR they were running, when they were saying, you know, cases of COVID, was it people with COVID? Was it people who were dying of COVID? Like, in the case of, like, the death certificate recording sham. Anyway, so that got me into a whole bunch of trouble. And actually, that investigation is what got me banned from journalism in New Mexico. So I realize this story is totally out of order, and that's okay. I'm going to invite you to exercise your Aquarian non-linear cognitive processes and flow with me here. So I'm gonna tell you about the response in a second. I had pitched the same then editor at the Santa Fe New Mexican another time in 2022, around election shenanigans and the governor certifying her own election along with her own personal accountant, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so I have the same experience that I had Monday when I called to follow up with the new editor at the Santa Fe New Mexican. And it went a little something like this. Hey, this is Danny Katz. I sent you an article that I wrote last week and was just calling to follow up. Yeah, that's not anything we're going to be interested in. And I was like, really? I don't see what could be more relevant or pressing than, you know, the information that I unpacked about like who's actually driving policy in Santa Fe. And he's like, yeah, some of the research seemed pretty light to me. Like I just wasn't convinced. And I was like, no problem. I could totally beef up the article. I have over 200 pages of notes. I have receipts for everything. I was just trying to keep it to like a tight 3,200 words. But if there are any specific parts that you want me to go back into, I'm totally happy to do that. And he's like, well, I don't know. I just don't think it's for us. And I'm like, okay, but I don't, like, don't you think it's important that people understand that our mayor funded the terrorist group that took down the statues illegally? And he goes, yeah, but do you have any proof for that? And I'm like, yeah, I absolutely have the proof. I have the screenshots of the, you know, donor page for the philanthropic organizations he funded that funded them. And he's like, yeah, well, I don't know. You know, I don't like to take chances in all my decades as an, you know, in journalism. We just don't make the kind of leaps like you're making here. And I said, well, you know, I'm happy to beef it up or rewrite it. In all my decades of as a journalist, like I've only ever reported, you know, ethically and honestly. And he cuts me off and he goes, I don't need to have a pissing contest with you over who's been a journalist longer. And it was like the hostility was so crazy. And then I don't even remember the last part, but what I will say is he hung up on me. And this is exactly what happened when I pitched them about FOVID, and exactly what happened when I pitched them on the questionable election audit. And so two things, because I am not one who takes, who's going to be blown off lightly. Like, my background as a journalist has me so used to rejection that I will keep pushing, 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 pushing until I at least get an answer. And I'm going to come back to that later in today's show. But not to be deterred, after he hung up on me, I emailed him immediately and said, we must have gotten cut off because we weren't able to exchange polite goodbyes or professional niceties, but I really appreciate having a chance to chat about the article. I look forward to hearing back from you about the parts you're wanting me to build out, and I really look forward to collaborating with you on this. Of course, I haven't heard from him. But what I'm realizing, like, in the grand scheme of globalist collusion and like how many people have just completely surrendered their ethics, their morals, their principles, you know, anything vaguely relating integrity, right? I find that the treatment I get from OG journalists is to be the most brutal as well as the most telling. And so what I think is going on is, and I'm just making it up, of course, because in all the instances, all of the Santa Fe, New Mexican editors have hung up on me in a rage. And honestly, guys, like, yes, I can sometimes be mouthy. I can sometimes have attitude. I can sometimes be harsh in how I can communicate. And I can honestly say in all of these instances with these editors at the Santa Fe, New Mexican, I've been completely chill, completely polite, coming at them with the best of intentions, right? Like, I'm not leading with, I'm sure you think I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist, or I know you're totally co-opted by the entities that I'm exposing. I'm coming at it like idealistically and innocently, like, you guys are a journalistic outlet and I'm a journalist, so why don't we do journalism together? And 100% of the time I'm treated with this insane hostility and then hung up on. And I think what's going on is just the guilt, right? I think that when I'm confronting these people, and I don't know why it is that I'm calling the Santa Fe New Mexican, but I'm not calling any of the other publications. I don't know if it's like a gut hit that I'm getting. And weirdly enough, There's a phone in their newsroom that people regularly pick up. I don't think that's really an option in other newsrooms. Anyway, I think the integrity lapse that is shoved in their face when I'm trying to deal with them honestly and integrously with what are obviously really relevant, timely, and prescient stories, and they know that I know that whatever their no's are total BS. So then they just get angry and they project that anger onto me, even though their anger is with themselves for being such sellouts. And that's where we're at. But most of them don't even respond at all. It's just radio silence. And I'm guessing it's a 21st century distortion because even back in the day before, Facebook and Instagram and everyone has a podcast, and even before blogs took off to the extent that they took off and maybe have morphed through Substack. I don't know if blogs are still a thing, but even like the biggest publications would send a rejection notice. Like I remember pitching Newsweek by print, by printing out my article and putting it in an envelope and snail mailing it to Newsweek magazine, and then getting a printed, like snail mailed rejection letter. Sure, it was a form letter that they shoved my name into, but there was a semblance of adherence to a social contract of like, a modicum of respect for colleagues within our industry, an acknowledgement of like, you, freelance journalist, took the time to put together a pitch or even an article or an op-ed and send it our way. And we're going to acknowledge that and honor you. And honor the relationship between us because I cannot tell you how many times I was rejected from a publication many, many times before I was then published in said publication. So it's like if any one of those, it was a totally different time, right? But if any one of those editors who rejected me before publishing me was a dick about it, the odds would be infinitely slimmer that we would work together in the future, that we would have a friendly, cooperative working relationship in the future. But, whatever distortion, I don't even want to cut it to just distortion because that's a judgment, right? It's certainly not my preference. I would say this new way of doing it, but it's a new way of not doing it. Like there isn't this acknowledgement or honoring of some ongoing collaboration, which might not be unfolding in this here now moment, but maybe we're seeding the groundwork for something in the future. That seems to have completely gone away because I would say 75% of the publications I sent this to, radio silence, total radio silence. And there's the radio silence from a cold pitch. Where it's like, yeah, we have too many people sending us stuff. We don't have time to get back. I mean, I still think it would be wise to set up some sort of auto response or to have someone's assistant go through them and just send acknowledgements. But I can understand a little bit more when it comes to totally blind pitching and there isn't an established relationship in place. But I also sent the article to some podcasters who have had me on their shows before, who have been on my show before. And I was shocked that multiple podcasters who I have already have an established relationship just radio silenced it. I find that odd, And I do think people are doing it more and more as we've become a more digitally dependent social structure. For surezies since COVID, because I think a lot of these people are like, well, I've never met her in person. It's not like I'm gonna run into her at Erewhon, so I don't have to be embarrassed by crapping all over our email exchange relationship or acknowledging that she reached out to me or exists whatsoever, right? Those things are taken off the table, but you never know, right? And for everyone who's been a dick to me digitally, there is an aspect of me, an eighth house aspect of me that is like sadistically, gleefully, patiently awaiting the moment where we run into one another in real time. And I'm sweet as pie. But anyway, some instances of this. Another one, and this didn't have to do with the article per se, but there's a content creator. She's got a really big following. She became a millionaire quite young, and we're in the same realm. She deals with like mindset and manifestation. And so there's a lot of crossover between her work and my languaging work. So in the past, I'd sent her word up. She loved it. She shared it with her people. I'd sent her Betterarchy. She loved it. She shared it with her people. She had a baby a few years ago, and I thought, well, the holidays are coming up. I'd love to send her Yes, I Am. Like, what a fun gift. So I went into our Instagram and I saw her mailing address and I said, hey, just want to double check that this is still the best mailing address. You know, I have a coloring book to send over. Radio silence. Send a follow-up. Send us an email, right? And I figure, okay, it's her assistant. Send an email saying, hey, just want to send you guys over my book. Radio silence. Send another follow-up. And then the response I get back is, we're not interested in any partnerships at this time, paid or unpaid. And it was like, ew. Like, I'm not asking for a partnership. I'm not proposing a partnership. I wasn't opposed to one, but I didn't even know that was on the table. I honestly just thought, like, this is someone who's going to appreciate this book. Sure, it would be lovely for her to share this with her people, but I'm thinking she's going to totally get it. She is breeding now, and she probably knows other people with kids and can just share it around. But if nothing else, she'll just like it, right? It was like my thank you for sharing my other books. And I just thought, that's not a smart way to do business. Like, and then I just saw that they have a new CEO. So maybe the person who I sent it to isn't even there. But even if it's a new CEO, I would recommend what I, if I were consulting with this organization, I would look back into all of the emails, all of the exchanges to see if there was an established relationship with me and see if there was something to pick up on instead of dropping the ball on an already established relationship and basically pooping on it. Like, I did not appreciate that response at all. And who's to say that at some point we wouldn't co-lead a retreat together, participate in a conference together, be on one another's podcasts? Like, it was enough to have me unfollow them, not out of malice, but just like, I can feel the change. I'm not really interested in what they're doing lately, and I don't want to support people who don't want to support me back. Like, not in a quid pro quo way, but in an honest law of polarity way, just like energetic balance, right? It's one of the hermetic principles, right? It's just being attuned to the balance of giving and receiving. And so, yeah, I thought that was kind of creepy. And as far as the, you know, the communication pattern of ignoring people, I'm sure you guys know where I stand on it. I would encourage all of us to honor this the human beings in our lives, our colleagues, the, you know, our contemporaries who are walking the earth together instead of just ignoring them. And I get that we're all busy. And, you know, even if it's like, hey, I look forward to having the time to respond properly, just some acknowledgement would be great. I want to talk about the phrase midlife because I'm hearing it more and more, and I'm not a fan. It feels to me, and I'm, as you guys know, and if you're new to tuning into me, I have adopted Northrop. I have adopted Dr. Christiane Northrup's wellness recommendation of not anchoring ourself to an age, right? And I've done shows before. You can look them up on my Odyssey channel and my podcast background of the lie that is linear time and how time is actually a multidimensional, omnidirectional, omnipresent measure of synchronicity. that is verily impossible to grasp with our third dimensional brains. And so, by way of collective agreement, we've all kind of dropped in to this linear timeline that would have us believe that we're all riding these conveyor belts from birth through a few like notable standard issue, socially agreed upon celebratory moments and then die. But that isn't how time actually works. And so, part of what I've been unpacking the past few years are the mortality codes embedded in language and encoded into every word, and recognizing that when we speak linear time, which more often than not is a temporal comparison, and I'll unpack that in a moment, we're activating the mortality codes in our own sacred vessels. And it's interesting that I've been working on this language of eternity paradigm for a few years, and I got really into the Essenes last year and read a couple books on how the Essenes lived to be like 600 years, 800 years, 1200 years. That was all pretty standard in that community. So, it's recognizing that, like, at some point along the way, humans were programmed to shorten our lifespan and to buy into a much more condensed earth walk. And from my perspective, as a word nerd, I see that happening through the language and through programming mortality and temporal limitation into our everyday lingo. So, how this relates to midlife is whenever we speak linear time, right, the way that that coding infuses the creation technology that is our every word, you can envision it like two stakes in the ground with a piece of rope hung between them, right? Or pulled between them. And every time I speak linear time, it's like staking a section of that rope into the ground and like nailing it into this linear, condensed time paradigm that is a function of language. And part of what I think Dr. Northrup was intending in sharing this wellness hack, which is don't tell anyone your age, don't think or contextualize yourself in terms of your age, throw that number away and live into eternity, into like this eternal now, is that time and age are so loaded with programming, right? And when I mention temporal comparison, right, that when we're speaking linear time, primarily we're comparing, is she older or younger than I am? Is he older or younger than my brother? Is that woman age appropriate for that man, right? There's this comparison around time. Oh, so and so bought their first house at 30. I'm 40, so I'm a loser that I don't have a house, right? It's like they're set up as these markers to compare and to like run these stories around what's too old, what's too young, right? And I'm not going into Cherry Mary Sunshine Land at like, I'm gonna have a baby at 99 years old. That being said, Jesus's grandmother Anna had Jesus at like, or had Jesus's father, mother. It had to be mother, right? Had Jesus's, I don't even remember. But had a grandparent of Jesus. Was it a boy or a girl? I'm not even remembering. Sorry, guys, my head is swirling right now. I'll tell you about the swirling in a second. Okay, but Jesus's grandmother had Jesus's either mother or father at like 50. 500, I think, 400s. So I'm not saying it's impossible. And this is, part of the way that I'm playing the Earth game this go around is playing with this quantum languaging paradigm that, for whatever reason is coming through me, and of which I am a custodian, and I'm unpacking the pieces of this. I mean, it's a universal truism that language programs reality. It's just, something that's been kept hidden from us for a while. So I'm guessing, in terms of like my last Paul Levy interview, it's like a terma, right? Quantum languaging would be a terma. It's something that was already known, this body of work that language programs reality. And you and me and the people in this conversation are all unpacking how that works. And so, what I think Dr. Northrup was saying in terms of resisting the urge to anchor ourselves to these really, truly, relatively arbitrary temporal markers is to liberate us from other people's projected stories, from the programming laded into these numbers, and as well as for ourselves, so that we're not activating the coding that would instruct our body to degenerate, to fall apart, to slow down, to relinquish its ability to regenerate, to replenish, to get stronger, right? There's a sort of devolutionary story that's kind of tacked on to these different numbers. And so, by extricating ourselves from that entire paradigm, from ceasing to keep count or to like assert, yeah, to assert like our connection with that. It's like consent, right? I'm realizing it's very similar to the Lawful studies that I'm doing and I'm sharing with you guys in bits and pieces by way of my interviews with like Phil and Michael and Daniel from Sacred Honor, and with Brandon Joe Williams, and these other people who are in these conversations. But I'm realizing that it's similar. It's like the legal commercial realm is this like false justice matrix that's been laid atop of natural law, common law, equity law, what, let's just call it natural law. And then because people are indoctrinated into that system, they don't know that there's this parallel option that's truly liberating. So I think in speaking the mortality codes embedded in temporal linear time coded language, we're giving our consent, even though we don't realize we're doing that, to mortality, to this devolutionary pathway in this condensed linear time frame. That's how I interpret Dr. Northrup's recommendation. And so I have adopted this because, as you guys know, I'm a total health nerd. Like I'm drinking green juice in structured, blessed, hyper mineralized water. And so why not? Why not play around with that? And I have noticed that in my dance with time's onward ticking, if we're going with that kind of, linear time-based idiom, or merely the experiencing of sun spins and moon cycles, is that the way that time expresses through this vehicle is totally not linear. It's totally not linear. I have had periods of having more gray hairs with way less sun spins than I've accrued now. Changes in skin tone, dance moves and yoga poses, moving towards the weaker, and then quantum leaping towards the stronger, right? It's really not linear. And the less and less I speak of linear time, the more my experience of my vehicle and this whole realm is nonlinear and quantum and, moments of expanded, quote unquote, time. Anyway, all of this is to say that the term midlife, like, not only is it obviously encoded with linear mortality codes, I mean, talk about putting a pin, a stake in that rope to claim midlife to me. I don't know. It just feels like it's playing chicken with God. And it's a phrase that I reject, and it actually created a bit of a wedge between someone who I thought was a friend or had called a friend for, I mean, a long, 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 long time. And I had gotten the idea a few Christmases ago of putting out a newsletter with recommendations for my favorite gifts. And so I was, doing my best to support my friends who were small business owners, who were entrepreneurs, and putting their products out. So she had a product line, and I reached out to her saying, "Hey, do you have any special offers that I can share with my people?" And she's like, "Oh, I have this new offering, and I want to protect her anonymity. So I'm not going to say what the product was. I will just say that it had the phrase midlife in the branding, in the title." And it was a different product than I thought that was thinking of promoting. So I said, "You know what? I don't think that that's going to be in alignment for this." And she got really mad and has not yet gotten unmad despite multiple apologies on my part. And ultimately, as much as I wanted to support my friend, I didn't feel comfortable. I mean, essentially programming you guys, like programming my tribe, everyone who's gonna read the newsletter, with any ideas of putting a stake in our earthwalk and deciding that this was how much time we have left. I don't know. It just feels there are certain ways that I can tend towards the like prudish or ascetic or. Yeah, maybe it's just like more kind of like a monk, like whatever my past lives were with that, where I just feel like, I don't know, claiming certain things is like messing with all that is, with the Most High. Like I recognize that the Most High knows how many breaths I have left, and that is really not up to me. And for me to like cl make claim and say this is how much time I have left feels like I'm throwing down a gauntlet that I personally don't feel comfortable throwing down. I don't know that. Like my friend Sasha died in, I think he was 35. My dad died in his 50s. So was Sasha's midlife what? 17, 18? Was my dad's midlife in his 20s? It's like it's also why I reject the idea of, I can already feel the pushback I'm getting, but like children aren't supposed to die. It's obviously awful. I cannot imagine how painful it is for a parent to lose a child, and I have the utmost compassion. I do not wish that on anyone. But from, Stephen Jenkinson's work and my own contemplations on death, it's like, who are we to determine how much life we deserve? We, decide that we have coming our way. I don't know. It just feels quite arrogant. And my experience with that kind of arrogance is a smackdown. I used to see it in, when I went through my ayahuasca phase in the early 2000s, and I would see in ceremonies people being taught lessons about how to create intentions for their journeys. And they were learning those lessons the hard way by, I don't know, going into it with a certain kind of bravado or arrogance and getting smacked down. And so that occurs to me with claiming a midlife. But it's also like directing our bodies to start some sort of like downward devolution, like in terms of mortality codes and what I'm programming my body to configure itself to be. I'm not going to program it to configure to, weaker, less mobility, less fun, less, like whatever the less thing is, whatever that is, if that's something that all that is, that capital L life decides is going to express through me, so be it. I graciously show up as a temporary custodian of this vehicle to allow life to move through me as it wants to, but I'm not gonna go programming it for sucky stuff willy-nilly. I'm not gonna do that. And of course, I respect everyone's right to do that. It's just with my own, attunement to language, and that being my primary lens of perception, I'm highly aware of that kind of programming. And so for me, it was like, there's no way I'm going to put a product that invokes this midlife curse into the consciousnesses of my high vibe superstar tribe. Like, I'm just not gonna do that. So the friendship took a beating, but maybe it wasn't a real friendship if it didn't survive that. And I'm bringing it up because I'm seeing it more and more and more. Obviously, my algorithms are showing it to me, and I'm encouraging us to extricate ourselves from the enslavement construct that is linear time, that is, it's like in the same way that our modern day lexicon is littered with like booby traps and like little weaponized ways for us to disempower ourselves, to limit ourselves, to make ourselves small. That's what the mortality codes are doing in linear time-based language. They're aging us. They're directing our bodies to shut down, to move in a certain direction. So let's not midlife, right? We don't know. We have no idea how much time we have left. And again, my perspective doesn't resonate, throw it away. It just feels like it's a little bit playing with fire plus the deleterious coating. Okay, back to the green beverage. Just hop, hop, hopping around. So last solo podcast, I mentioned my frustration at, oh my God, claiming to be harmed because you heard someone else use a word in reference to their own life, and the hearing of that word destroys us, right? Think of me getting thrown out of my improv school for saying that ballet was faggy in a sketch, right? The person who is claiming to be harmed, in my estimation, hasn't really endured real harm. Because I think when we endure real harm, we recognize that hearing someone else say a word that isn't even directed at us doesn't even come close. Anyway, I was talking about that's actual privilege. Like being able to control culture, right? To silence people, to cancel people, to get, someone thrown out of improv class. That's real privilege, right? That's actual privilege in the way that that word has been weaponized. And I was looking for it in our favorite blueprint for uniting against tyranny, the language of betterarchy, and I found it. So I wanted to pick that up since we're in our nonlinear kind of scat and read us from the privilege section, but I'm gonna wet my whistle. Okay. Here we go. The word privilege has taken on a particularly polarizing position in the collective lexicon, as it is currently being hurled at folks for such egregious atrocities as being born with penises, functioning limbs, heteronormative inclinations, and perceived melanin deficiencies. Shaming and berating people for their perceived slash projected privilege is violent, sadistic, and pointless. All it does is legitimize and empower the very system that is doing the privileging. It reinforces inequality by naming and claiming the perceived slash projected inequality while sustaining the issues it alleges to call out and seeding more of them into our future. Let's take a moment to define what privilege actually means, given that the word has been so weaponized and has become so dangerously loaded that it now functions to project an epic array of programmed assumptions onto folks based on superficial optics that don't accurately speak to anyone's lived experience, only to the stereotypes we have been indoctrinated to hurl upon one another. Privilege, a right or benefit given to some people and not to others. It's true that some folks are bestowed with benefits that others are not. Some folks are born into broken homes, while others incarnate into tightly bonded family units. Some inherit disabilities or neurological distortions, while others are blessed with exceptional gifts and talents. Plenty of folks endure a combination of these factors, as is the case with Stephen Hawking, Vincent van Gogh, and Daniel Johnston, among countless others whose names we will likely never know. Some folks undergo traumatic experiences that will scar them for life, while others are blessed with safe, incident-free childhoods that allow them to preserve their innocence and skate through their formative years without PTSD. Some are born into peaceful, resource-rich geographies, while others are born into impoverished, war-torn environments. Some folks benefit from family connections and esteemed bloodlines, while others are left to figure it out on their own, without these kinds of support structures already in place. When it comes to privilege, it's really a mixed bag. Alas, the Matrix has thoroughly mangled the true meaning of this word to now connote a reductive checklist of stereotypes and externalities that we have been manipulated into associating with a deeply unfair, unchecked advantage, which is now being mislabeled as privilege. According to this paradigm, every person with white skin has more privilege than anyone with dark skin, just as anyone with a penis has more privilege than anyone with a vagina. This is supposed to apply even if the black person was born into a loving family of wealth and the white person was born to an abusive crack whore who sold him into child slavery when he was 4, or if the male was born with a rare blood disease that forced him to endure several painful operations throughout the childhood he spent in isolation, while the female was born healthy and excelled at sports at an early age, ultimately earning a full ride to an Ivy League university and 2 Division I championship titles. Do you see how this word has been maligned and weaponized? The cancel culture blood sport of hurling the word privilege only serves to direct our attention towards the perception of inequality or unfairness. And for some, that's the point, as we have been led to believe that there is value in compulsively calling out disparity. Alas, there is acknowledging and there is wallowing. This is not to deny the legitimacy of the descriptive or the pain that hierarchy's trademark inequity foments. It is simply to explain how this word is functioning as a means of reality creation technology and to understand the frequencies it is seeding into the morphic field as well as the minds of our fellow humans. Acknowledgement happens in a moment. We illuminate a shadow, we slip off the blindfold, look at what we've done, take stock of how it's affected ourselves and others, acknowledge our responsibility, glean the lessons, and move forward, all the wiser, more humble, and integrated for the experience and the lessons it afforded us. Privilege, as it's being wielded these days, is akin to a bludgeon, driving the oftentimes misguided and erroneous point home again and again and again and again, rendering the top tier higher and the lower tier lower, verily expanding the distance between the levels of hierarchy. It makes separation separater, moving us further and further away from each other. Being positioned on a higher status rung than another doesn't mean that someone is bad, has done something wrong, or is deserving of punishment slash societal disfavor. To judge someone for his position is to fuel the construct that is doing the positioning, because that construct is reliant upon our distraction and our obsession with the task of blaming each other for the inequities between us, which keeps us from addressing the actual problem, which is the metastructural overlord that is manipulating the positioning and is trying to convince us that we need positions in the first place. Labeling folks privileged is disempowering sour grapes. Not only does it do all of nothing to equalize the playing field, it puts down those folks who are being placed in the unprivileged category. When we hurl the privilege label, we place those who fall outside the boundaries of this classification on a lower tier of the hierarchical scale. In this way, the modern day use of this word does the exact opposite of what those who wield it claim to intend. Projecting privilege onto folks isn't just reductive and divisive, it is to maintain the very inequities we are claiming to critique. Only when we speak equality will we pave the way for an equal society. And by equal, I mean one forged of equal opportunity, not equality of outcome, which is an idealistic fairy tale incompatible with the natural order of life here on planet Earth. There are no better hierarchical languaging upgrades for privilege as the word is currently being wielded. Because it is not a matter of a better word or phrase, it's a matter of shifting the focus of our attention onto the empowerment and equality we are choosing to live into, instead of harping on the inequities that piss us off. To this end, we are wise to examine the urge to hurl the privilege label, and to instead turn our attention inwards, and to get real with the parts of ourselves that are feeling inadequate, or left out, or less than, and to take responsibility, heal, and integrate in service to our wholeness and our evolution. Oh, yay, that's it. Okay, this is actually gonna lead us into a little screenshot I wanna share with you guys. Let me take a sip. I saw this in a documentary that Eli Bransford recently put out, and I highly recommend it, especially if you live in Santa Fe. He's done such a great job getting the history down and just really unpacking in a granular fashion all of the destruction that has come to Santa Fe under this guy, Mayor Alan Weber. So I was shocked. I was shocked by this picture. I haven't been to a Democratic Socialist meeting, accelerator. You know what? I want to talk about accelerators. We're going to come back to this in a second, but I know that I mentioned this earlier on. So as I continue to unpack the philanthropy NGO grift that is absolutely driving policy all over the country, all over the world, and is totally getting away with it, or has been until now, I'm realizing how important the educational piece is. Of course, like Yuri Bezmenov talked about this in Ideological Subversion, the first phase is demoralization, and the first way they do that is get into the schools, right? Indoctrination. By way of, their propaganda machine and the access that they have. And so what I've noticed is all of these organizations that are getting these massive grants. So here's how it works. You have these organizations, they seem like little local nonprofits, right? They get these massive grants from these huge billionaire foundations like Open Society or Novo Foundation or Ford Foundation, MacArthur, Kellogg, Libra Foundation, which is the Pritzkers, Pew Charitable Research. The list goes on and on and on. For every like billionaire, they for surezies have a philanthropy that goes along with it. Zuckerberg has one, Omidyar has his. These giant philanthropies give millions of dollars to each of these nonprofits. And then when the little nonprofit is receiving millions of dollars, they're also receiving instructions and steering, right? So these gifts aren't coming for free. It's influence peddling. That does it for the first half of today's podcast, as you are inspired to keep hanging out with me, to keep on listening, to tune in to what I'm going to say next. You can find the second half of today's show and all of my second half shows on both my Locals and Patreon communities at dannycats.locals.com and patreon.com/dannycats for as little as $5 a month. You get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content. Also reminding you one last time to subscribe to the channel, to sign up to my newsletter, to review my books, this podcast, to stock up on green powder from Chemical Free Body by way of the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are onoscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.